You're listening to Your Financial Choices on WDIY Allentown. Your Financial Choices may discuss various financial-related topics, and thus would like to offer the following disclosures. Lori Siebert is employed by Valley National Group, the Valley National Financial Advisors Group of Companies. Investments are offered through Valley National Investments Incorporated, member FINRA, SIPC. To ensure compliance with requirements imposed by the IRS, we inform you that any U.S. federal tax advice contained in this communication is not intended to or to be used for the purpose of avoiding penalties under the Internal Revenue Code or promoting, marketing, or recommending to another party any transaction or matter addressed herein. This show is for educational purposes only. For advice specific to your own situation, we recommend that you consult your CPA, CFP, or attorney.
Good evening, everyone, and welcome to the show. This is your host, Lori Siebert. I'm a CPA, CFP, and AEP on the web at yourfinancialchoices.com. You can listen online at wdiy.org, and folks outside our listening area are invited to go there as well to listen to all the programming that we have here, and we appreciate it. In fact, if there are any old shows you're interested in listening to, you can also listen to podcasts of prior shows that we've done. You can just search for the program, Your Financial Choices, and look for some of the past topics that we've had. If you're a new listener, we try to bring on various guests throughout the season. Sometimes I just run with a topic myself and bring you more in-depth information to help you make better decisions in your financial life. So if you have any ideas or interested in hearing some topics that maybe we haven't talked about in the past, you're welcome to send some ideas to us at yourfinancialchoices.com, and we'll take a stab at bringing some new ideas to you if you would like. Today is March 19th, 2014. The markets were down today, with the suggestion by the Federal Reserve Chairman Janet Yellen that interest rates would go up sooner than expected. The Dow closed down at 16,222, the NASDAQ at 4307, and the S&P at 1860. Last week, we talked about how different types of income are taxed on your return. Tonight, we are taking your calls and your tax questions. And while we do that, we will also use your tax return to do some financial planning. I'm going to set some guidelines for various life stages that people are in and how financial planning applies to that. So we'll talk about that in a little bit. We are live. We are here to take your questions. Judy Ann will answer your calls, take your information, and ask you to mute the radio so you can hear me without the delay and we can talk without confusion. We do discuss general financial planning topics and not specific investments. And while I do typically have a topic each week, you can still ask questions off topic. I'll do my best to answer them. The number this evening is 610-758-8810. That's 610-758-8810. You can either talk live on the air with me, or if you're not comfortable with that, you can just give your question to Judy Ann. She'll write it down and bring it into the studio, and I will answer as best I can. Email is also available at yourfinancialchoices.com. So tonight, I would love to have some income tax questions. That's my favorite thing to do, is answer questions. Love helping people. And I love hearing new situations. Sometimes I even get stumped once in a while. And I love learning. So I learn from listeners. I learn from questions that you might have. And then questions you have, in turn, help others who may be facing similar situations. Maybe they're a little shy to call in and ask. My goal is that if we can get some questions answered, get some guidelines, help you along, you can get your tax returns done, prepared. Maybe get your refunds if you have those, or if you owe money, you can start saving up. You still have a month to pay your bill. So let's move forward with that. At the same time, I will also talk about financial planning tonight, but I do want to mention to any Lafayette alumni listeners, the Council of Lafayette Women are presenting their 2014 conference called The Power of Community, Lafayette Women Supporting Each Other in Life and Work, and it's on Saturday, April 5th. I will be presenting a session on financial planning for any stage of your life. That's what my session is called. So I'm going to incorporate some of that into the show tonight, kind of give you a flavor of it. If you are an alum of Lafayette, more information is available at calendar.lafayette.edu. And that is in particular to Lafayette faculty, staff, alumni, students, friends, things like that. The president of Valley National Financial Advisors, Thomas Riddle, is a graduate of Lafayette and continues to have great enthusiasm for his alma mater. So I appreciate being invited to speak on his behalf. So tonight, tax questions. You're welcome to call in. Number is 610-758-8810. And with all the attention to tax season right now, we want to get those done. So you can also then use your tax return to do some planning for yourself. So I kind of mention this every year. Don't just fill in those numbers or pick up your tax return from your tax preparer if you have someone help you with it. Just don't pick it up and put it aside. Sit down and say, what can I learn from this tax return? Because you can learn quite a bit. And with that information, you're empowered to then move forward and make some, you know, important decisions, set some goals for where you are, where you're going. And part of that comes from knowing what stage you are in your life and then kind of planning around that. So I think quite often people think financial planning is, you know, just for those people who have money. What I might say is that people with money have done their financial planning, okay? So if you don't have money, you might want to say, is there anything I could do? Could I make some better decisions? What could I do today to reach some goals? Let's set some goals. And by visualizing those and having something to work toward, you will increase your chances of being successful. And we call that financial planning. So don't think that financial planning is just for those with money. Again, it's the people with money that have probably done the financial planning. So how I want to break this down is, and I haven't heard this before, I made this up, I hope nobody else has done it, but I started thinking about how can I talk about the stages of your life. And I've broken it down into five. So we're going to call these stages testing, nesting, investing, resting, and divesting. Okay? Testing, nesting, investing, resting, and divesting. So if we can visualize these stages, we may be able to get perspective of where we are, where we've been, and where we're going. And also keep in mind that at any stage, we may be simultaneously experiencing aspects of the other stages, okay? So at the period where we may be resting, we might also be investing, okay? So we're going to see, if I have time, that how all of these pieces may be affecting us no matter what stage we're in. So the first stage, testing. What do I mean by that? Well, think about it. When you talk about your teenagers or your kids, what are they doing? They're pushing the envelope. They're testing you. They're testing your limits, that type of thing. So it's a period of time where we're learning. Maybe we're in school. We're finding out who we are. What do we want to be? We're trying new jobs, different degrees. It may be a stage where we're dependent on others for our living essentials. And recall when I said that we could be in any one of these stages, you know, we can be adults and still trying new jobs, right? And we could be an adult learner. We could be going back to college. But basically that stage typically for the majority of us is when we're younger. And again, it's that period of time where maybe we're in school testing. That's why it's easy to remember. Think school, education. It's kind of that period of time where we're trying to think where we're going to go. And that is an important stage I'll talk about later when we talk about the key events that are happening at this time. At each of these stages, I'm going to talk about some of the key events that are going on and how some important decision making at each of those stages will then springboard us into reaching our goals, help us reach our goals maybe a little bit more effectively, a little bit more efficiently, maybe a little faster. So we're going to talk about the stages of financial, of the various stages in our life where we are for financial planning. Then we're going to talk about some of the key events that happen at each of those stages. stages, and then we're going to talk about setting some particular goals. And these are going to be examples. I can't cover everything in the show, but I'm going to try to just zone in on some that I think are quite important and can have quite a big impact on you if you can even focus on each of these events at these stages, okay? But in the meantime as well, if you have tax questions, you're welcome to call in. The number is 610-758-8810. We'll be back in a minute.
WDIY thanks its members and Valley National Financial Advisors, offering a broad spectrum of financial services for more than 25 years, including fee-based asset management. It all starts with personal goals and an understanding of risk tolerance, investment objectives, and the markets. On the web at valleynationalgroup.com or 610-868-9000.
You're listening to WDIY, Lehigh Valley's community NPR station. If you appreciate and value the programming we provide, including NPR's in-depth news coverage, our local public affairs programs, and the diverse mix of music we broadcast each day, please consider becoming a member. Membership is our most important source of revenue. We can't do it without you. You can make a secure donation online at wdiy.org. That's wdiy.org. And thanks for your support.
And we are back. This is your host, Lori Siebert. And you are listening to Your Financial Choices. We are taking your calls this evening for tax questions. You can call live on air or off air, whatever you're more comfortable with. The phone number is 610-758-8810, 610-758-8810. We usually get quite a few tax questions. So during tax season, I try to keep the topics general enough that we have time to take those calls. And we can take them live on air or off air. Just give your question to Judy Ann if you don't want to talk live on air. In the meantime, we're talking about financial planning, using your tax return to do some financial planning. But first, I kind of would like to set the stage talking about the various stages in our life that we go through that we can identify and say what are some key events in each of those stages where we can focus on, set some goals, and have some impact. So those stages I call are testing, nesting, investing, resting, and divesting. Testing, we said, was that period maybe when you're in school, you're learning, finding out who you are, what do you want to be, trying new jobs, that kind of thing. The second stage, nesting. This is the period where we feel we're ready to settle down. Maybe start a relationship, have a family, buy a first car, buy a first house. We're settling in. We're hoping for stability. You know, we're out of college. You know, we've kind of had our fun, and now we're starting to feel like we need to be grown-ups and kind of settling down. So that's the nesting stage. And that could be like a 25-year period, 25 years or more, in fact. So I would also add that that's probably the period of the most unknowns. We don't always know what is in store for us in our careers at that stage. We don't know what, how many children we're going to have, maybe. We don't know what the cost of living might be. We don't know how our marriage might go. Hopefully it'll be long and prosperous and all things like that. So a lot of unknowns during that second stage of nesting. The third stage, investing. Somewhere along the way, we start to realize that we've saved some money, maybe in retirement accounts, maybe in education accounts, bank accounts. Kids are growing up, maybe working and covering some of their own expenses, or maybe a spouse goes back to work or starts working full time. So all of a sudden, our perspective starts changing a little bit. Instead of looking inward and looking at that house that we own and taking care of the house and filling it with things and buying the furniture and taking care of the kids and which schools are they going to and, what clothes are they wearing and what piano lessons and what sports and all of that, all of a sudden, as our attention kind of gets to go away from that because the kids kind of grow up, they become a little bit more independent, and maybe we've been saving in our retirement accounts at work, and all of a sudden we kind of start to look up, we have a little bit more time, we see that we've saved some money, we see gosh, what's the next stage after this? We have the house. We've maybe paid off a lot of it, maybe not all of it. We might still have a mortgage. But all of a sudden, we start to see that light at the end of the tunnel. That's our time. We start investing. We start really getting the benefit of compounding on what we've saved. And we have to have a new perspective on that. We need to start paying attention to that, because all of a sudden we might think we're actually maybe someday going to be able to retire. People start thinking, gosh, can I retire? Maybe we're starting to get a little achy at work and we realize we can't do this every day. We can't do it anymore. When can we retire? And you start thinking, gosh, maybe in 5 to 10 years I can retire. So all of a sudden your head starts to come out of above water, and you start to say, now with my investments, what can I do? Okay. The fourth stage, resting, retirement. Yay. Now you can plan for all the things you want to do that you were waiting to do until you retired. I certainly promote people trying to do some of those special things while you're young enough to enjoy them. But if you have to wait till you retire, sometimes that happens. And then people maybe will do things like traveling or visiting the grandkids, or if you have them, doing those kinds of things. But you also have to think about, during this period of retirement, how are you going to live? This stage could last 25 years as well. So I mentioned that nesting stage could be 25 years. Your resting stage, that retirement years, that could last 25 years as well. So how are you going to be able to live through that? How are you going to afford it? What is your cash flow? Where is your income coming from? All right. The fifth stage is divesting. This stage might be 5 years or less. Divesting. People are not anxious to talk about estate planning or where their assets will go when they don't need them anymore. That's my mother's phrase. When I don't need that anymore, you can have it. And what she means is, when I'm gone, when I've passed away, when I'm dead, you can have it. So when you're kind of in your later years, and you know that, you know, the inevitable is coming, I call that divesting. So you have to start thinking about, how are you going to dispose of your assets? Who's going to get them? How are you going to make that happen? It's basically estate planning. So the five stages: testing, nesting, investing, resting, divesting. So those are kind of the stages in our lives. And again, sometimes they can overlap and we can experience those aspects simultaneously. And I'll talk about that in a little bit. And we're also going to talk about some of the key events, examples of key events that happen at each of those stages, and then what we can do about it. We did have a call come in off air. Ed called. He said he has two children, ages 10 and 12. They each have a little money in the bank and got some Social Security, some survivor benefits. Sorry about that, Ed. How much can they make or have before they have to fill out tax information? Do they have to pay taxes at this point? Ed, what will happen, the kids, if they have some money in the bank, maybe they earned a little bit of interest, you know, $5, $10 or something like that, and then they have the Social Security, they wouldn't have to file returns at this point if that's all they have. Federal has higher income limitations for kids. It's called unearned income. You know, if they have investment income up to a certain amount, they would have to file a tax return if it's over that. Then there may be kiddie tax issues. That's a whole nother element, a little complicated. It depends on what kind of income you have. But let's pretend their income, for this example, because they're so young, if their interest income is under $35, they don't have to file any returns. Pennsylvania, believe it or not, requires folks to file a return if they're going to owe a dollar of tax. I think they really need to completely change that. I can't imagine that processing those tax returns is so efficient that it's worth the dollar of tax. But as long as they make those little amounts, they're not going to have to even file. So once they start working, maybe, and their investment income gets up to, let's say, you know, $1,000, $1,200, some higher amounts, I'd have to look at those thresholds. because there is a standard deduction for unearned income, and then there's a different standard deduction for earned income when we talk about dependent children. So, but Social Security, Ed, is taxed only based on other income calculations. So there's like a worksheet fee people can do for Social Security. If the only income someone has is Social Security, none of it's going to be taxable. But if the kids had, you know, $25,000 of wages, then yes, some of their Social Security might be taxed. But for now, you're fine. Okay, I hope that helped. Thank you for the call, by the way. We have another question, Jeff. Can I take the question before we go to break? We have Mary from Catasauqua. Hello, Mary, can you hear me?
Yes, yes, I can.
Hi, how can I help you?
Well, I have whatever money that I have saved, invested, whatever, was pretty much passive because of employer mandated type accounts. So now I have a little bit of money that I've gotten by various means that is after tax, and I have it in two savings accounts earning next to nothing. So I want to act this year, and we're looking at putting it into IRAs. And everything that I have invested now is pre-tax. And I just think down the road when we take that money out, we're going to get really slammed. So I'm thinking this year, and my tax bracket this year and next year are probably going to be about the same. It's the 15%. So I think I'm going to do Roth. However, when I looked at the tax break I get for traditional, I think that that tax break is still probably going to be greater than what my tax is down the road on it. And I'm just, you know, I want to make money. But am I right in thinking that I should have some in after-tax investments, or can I put it all in pre-tax? Will I still make more than my tax liability might be?
Well, you're certainly thinking the right way, so I love that, first of all, about, you know, where are you going to get the best tax benefit? But, Mary, can I ask how old you are, if you don't mind?
I'm 57.
Okay, because one of the things that happens is we have, you know, time on our side. And sometimes what I find is people are afraid to put money into a retirement account at work because it's pre-tax and you can't get to it until you're age 59 and a half. And if you continue working, you may not even be able to tap it in the way you want even then. And because employers sometimes have restrictions on when you can take withdrawals out of 401ks. So if you take a distribution out of a pre-tax retirement account pre-age 59 and a half, you would not only have the income tax, you would also have a 10% penalty. So the wonderful thing I like about Roth is while you have money sitting in a bank, you're not really earning anything on it. The whole goal of the Roth is that you're putting after-tax money in it. You want it to grow so that at some time in the future, you take money out and it's all tax-free. And it has to be the longer of 5 years or age 59 and a half. But Mary, you can always take out your original contribution. So the only reason, and here's where you are on the right track, the only reason you'd want to put the money in the Roth is if you have if you were to get no tax benefit from doing a traditional and you know that you're going to be in a lower, on the Roth, if you're going to be in a higher tax bracket in the future. So if you think you're going to be in a lower tax bracket in the future, then the traditional IRA makes more sense.
Well, I don't think that I'm going to be in a lower, and you know, I think, but it could be, even if you say lower tax bracket, couldn't the tax table go up? I mean, tax is never going to go down. So even though it might be a lower bracket, does that make sense what I'm saying? The tax might be higher anyway.
Well, tax rates could go up. But so one of the things that I have cautioned people about for years, when I would see folks come in and they would tell me they're doing everything pre-tax because, you know, they've had this crammed into their head, you know, tax deferral, tax deferral, tax deferral. And if I save on a pre-tax basis, then I actually get the use of those tax savings for my investments. But what was happening, Mary, is then when these people were retiring, they had these huge retirement accounts And guess what? When they needed to take money out after they retired, the only money they had was taxable money. So I love Roth IRAs, but I thought you had said that you were going to be in a lower tax bracket in your future.
Well, no, I believe it'll be the same.
And okay.
I wish I had spoken to you first, because what I understood you to say, and I'm, is this year, and I've already done my taxes. I decided mm-hmm. I was going to do the Roth, so there would be no tax benefit. So I already filed my income taxes, but my plan is to not touch, and I'm already retired, and mm-hmm. my husband will probably be working with our finances. I'm hoping he can retire at 62. He's 2 years younger than I am. Mm-hmm. So I'm going to take Social Security at 62. He'll take Social Security. I will have a pension, and I don't think, God forbid, that I will need to touch any of that money now. Mm-hmm. So I thought you just said that the only reason to not put it in the traditional is maybe so I would have access to it. So maybe I should put everything in traditionals, or is that not correct?
No. What I meant is the traditional IRA, if you put money in the traditional IRA, you get the tax benefit today, but you can't tap that money without taxes and penalties for
right.
early withdrawal if you take it out before age 59 and a half, unless there's other exceptions that apply. But the Roth
right.
IRA, you could always take out your original contribution. So if you put $5,500 in, or maybe $6,500 in, and all of a sudden a year from now your roof needs replacing and you need that money, you could go back and get that $6,500 out of your Roth. You wouldn't be able to get it out of your traditional without an income tax and a 10% penalty.
Right. I just don't anticipate needing to touch that money for many years, and okay. I want to maximize my income. So is there really a short of, so assuming I'd have no penalties, I don't need the money, is there any reason then to put it in a Roth, or should I always put it in a traditional to get the max, you know, the tax break, and then, I don't know.
I always run the calculation with the traditional IRA, without the traditional IRA. How much are my real tax savings? Is it really just my tax bracket, or am I getting some other benefit, like lower AGI, which might give me more tax credits or more itemized deductions. So I try to look to see how much tax benefit it's actually getting. But if you think you're going to be in a lower tax bracket in your future, then yes, I would do the IRA. If you think you're going to be in a higher tax bracket in the future, I would do the Roth. If it's a wash, Mary, it doesn't matter which you do. It doesn't matter which one you do. So you could hedge your bet. Do one or the other. You know, if you think you're going to be in the exact same tax bracket, it
yeah.
doesn't matter. You'd end the same. Okay, so you just kind of, it's a way to hedge. I'm okay that you did the Roth. In my mind, I'm thinking that you're playing both sides a little bit. You got a little bit of Roth, you got a little bit of pre-tax. It might be all right.
Well, where is that crystal ball?
Oh, yeah, yeah. I would play the numbers every single year, Mary, before you do it. That's why they give us till April 15th to make those decisions for the prior year. You can sit and play with those numbers every single year and make the best decision per year, not just a blanket choice. Okay?
Right. Very good, Lori.
Right.
Thanks
Thank
for
you,
taking
Mary.
The call.
Okay,
You're
have
welcome.
A good night. Bye. Jeff, should we just wait till the half hour then? We'll just have skipped over that break.
We'll do a double break on
okay.
that.
All right. Folks, this is your host, Lori Siebert. You are listening to Your Financial Choices. We're talking about a number of things tonight. One is your tax questions, and you may call at 610-758-8810. That's 610-758-8810. Let's get those tax returns done. I loved Mary's call. I love talking about Roth IRAs. I think they're a great option for a lot of people. And, you know, but you do have to weigh the tax benefits of a traditional IRA versus a Roth IRA. And some people don't qualify to be able to do either of those, depending on your income or if you have retirement benefits offered through your employer. So you certainly want to make sure that you definitely qualify for that as well. I remember my brother-in-law did one year, and I said, you don't qualify. They made too much money. So I had to have him reverse it. And now I'm having to respond to a notice from the IRS that he got because of the distribution, the recharacterization of his IRA. So we will take care of that, though, as well. We are also talking about life stages for financial planning in your life, testing, nesting, investing, resting, and divesting. And as we come back from our break, we'll take your tax question calls at 610-758-8810. And then we'll also touch on some of the key events that happen during each of those stages and then how that might relate to setting some goals. We will be back in a couple minutes.
WDIY thanks its members and Valley National Financial Advisors, offering a broad spectrum of financial services for more than 25 years, including income tax preparation for individuals, businesses, estates, and trusts. Tax preparation involves more than putting numbers on a return. It requires planning. On the web at valleynationalgroup.com or 610-868-9000.
American folk and traditional music is a crazy quilt of colors and textures. In the tradition traces its many patterns and designs. Music handed down from generation to generation. In the tradition, Wednesday evening at 7 on WDIY FM Lehigh Valley Community Public Radio.
Spread the word about your organization or business to a well-informed audience. Become an underwriter with WDIY. Our lineup of NPR news and locally produced music programs reaches thousands of locally engaged listeners each day. Underwriting on WDIY is an affordable way to enhance your image and to provide information about your services to people who care. For more information, visit wdiy.org.
And we are back. I almost was taking a little nap there. It's a little downtime this time of year. Last week, I think I was hypermaniac on the show, and tonight I'm in a calm state. Folks, you are listening to Your Financial Choices. This is your host, Lori Siebert. I'm a CPA and a CFP and an accredited estate planner. We are taking tax questions this evening, trying to help get those tax returns done. Give you a little guidance if you need it. The phone number is 610-758-8810. You can either talk live on air with me or off air, whatever you're comfortable with. And if you're not comfortable with either, you can send questions through yourfinancialchoices.com. So we are also talking about financial planning and how that occurs at every stage of your life and testing, nesting, investing, resting, and divesting. And we're going to talk about some of the key events that happen during those periods. But before we get to that, I have a question from Anne, and it's off air. She said, regarding the last caller, comments, take out earnings only if Roth established for 5 years and benefit of Roth, children passing down, no income tax for beneficiary. Yes, so Anne is calling in just with some comments, and we did mention to Mary, I think she picked up on this, that she cannot take out the earnings until the longer of 5 years or age 59 and a half. So if someone sets it up at age 30, the five-year rule doesn't apply. It's the longer of 5 years or age 59 and a half that they cannot take the earnings out until the longer of those two periods, but they can always take out their original contributions. The rules for conversions are a little different, so I'm not talking about that. I'm talking about a regular Roth. And then, yes, I agree with Anne. The benefit of a Roth, for Mary, FYI, is that you can name your children, if you have children, or other family members, friends, whatever, as a beneficiary. And those beneficiaries retain that same tax status that you had that, if it is not subject to income tax for you, it's all pre-tax, then it won't be to your heirs either. Now, in Pennsylvania, it will be subject to inheritance tax, but it will not be subject to income tax. So it is a great estate planning tool that we quite often recommend for folks as well to make sure that they have all their proper beneficiary designations. That's part of the divesting stage, where you want to make sure that you have proper beneficiary designations on your assets, and which assets do you pass or spend down or use before others, because some assets that you want to pass to your heirs have better benefits than others. And the Roth is one of the best, because you're passing an asset to your heirs that will have no income tax consequences to them, whereas if you give them a traditional IRA or a 401k and they're a beneficiary of that, the income characteristics of that stay with that retirement account and it's income taxable to them, whereas the Roth would not be. So, Anne, thank you for that call. Thanks for your comments. I agree with you on that. If you have questions this evening, the phone number is 610-758-8810. So some of the key events in these various life stages, these financial planning stages. When I talked about testing and I said, remember, if we think about testing as education, it kind of helps us know where we are in what stage. Education and first jobs. So the key event, first jobs. I've talked about this before. When you're, you know, talking to your kids or you young college grads who or college kids who are listening out there, your education is important, obviously. You also want to think about what kind of job that education is going to get you. You want to make sure that you develop some transferable skills. Sometimes we, you know, get that from a liberal arts education, but we can also get transferable skills at, you know, many college institutions. But you want to make sure that you have a job that there will be positions out there for you, okay? Because your first job starts setting the stage for each subsequent job. Your first job sets that your character, your resume building, your pay scale, responsibility, promotion. So you want to think about the event at this stage that then will hopefully catapult you into, you know, future positions, better positions, and think about starting, you know, or establishing that base pay that forevermore your next job will always be based on. Quite often, you know, you go to positions and people say, well, what are you asking for? What were you getting paid? Well, guess what? You want to make sure that you are concentrating and paying attention to that event to set yourself up for those future events. We have a caller on line one. We have Carolyn from Salersburg. Hi, Carolyn.
Hi, how are you?
Good, how are you?
I'm doing well, thanks. And I'm sorry, I feel like this is kind of a silly question. It's regarding my W-4 forms and withholding allowance.
Okay.
We have been having too much tax taken out. I would like to get closer to getting, you know, even not getting a big refund.
Okay.
On our taxes. And I was having two, for the withholding, I was having two taken out.
Okay.
And I thought that the more you had taken, in other words, to decrease my tax.
Let me give you a little summary of it, and then you can tell me, you know, what you're thinking. First of all, when we fill out our W-4, when we're first employed, the employer hands us this W-4. They don't really explain anything. There's like maybe a worksheet that you also can't figure out and can't
That's
go through.
That's exactly right.
And even preparers don't like the W-4s because we can't figure them out either. But what happens is the W-4 asks you for your filing status and asks you how many exemptions you would have or dependents. So quite often, if you're single and you're all by yourself, and if I was only had wages, single one theoretically would withhold the exact amount of tax that would that would be due, okay? Theoretically. Okay. Now, if I'm single and I'm one, but I'm a homeowner and I have real estate taxes as a deduction and mortgage interest as a deduction and I'm itemizing, in essence, I almost have the equivalent of more dependents because I'm going to lower my income. So if I still had single one with all those deductions, I might be over withheld and I'll have a big refund. Conversely, if I'm single, one, and I don't have any deductions, but I have $10,000 worth of interest income, the employer is only withholding as much tax that would be on my wages. So if I have all this other income on my return, I might say to my employer, hey, don't make it single one, make it single zero dependents and take an extra, you know, $100 out of my paycheck. So that W-4 allows us to kind of manipulate our withholdings a little bit. So if we have too much withheld because we have things like extra deductions, then we might say to our employer, married, filing, joint, if you're married, Carolyn, you say married, filing, joint, and maybe four dependents or five dependents, and then they will withhold less because they go to a chart. They say, here are her wages. Here's how much she, gets paid, how often she gets paid. Here are her dependents, and here's what her tax would be, and that's how they withhold. The other problem that some people run into is when they're married. Let's say one spouse makes $20,000 and the other spouse makes $50,000 and their employer and they're both married filing joint and they say, you know, two exemptions or two dependents. The employer thinks that one is only making $20,000 and only withholds, you know, like nothing. And the $40,000 or $50,000, whatever I said, they might hold a little more. But when we add $20,000 and $50,000 together, all of a sudden we might be in a higher tax bracket. And then together we might not have had enough withheld. So is that kind of starting to make sense? Because I'm kind of responding to you, but also for other people who are listening, because this is a question that comes up quite often.
Oh, yes, so, absolutely.
So for you, one of the things I might have checked is I might have said, Carolyn, is there any chance that you or your spouse might have told your employer married filing joint withhold at the higher single rate? Sometimes people do that because they might have been at a stage in their life where they needed the extra taxes taken out. So you have to kind of ask your employer, what am I withholding at? What's filing status? Am I married filing joint? Am I married filing joint but withhold at the single rate? How many exemptions? So if you're married filing joint with two, you could go married filing joint with four, and that might do it. You might still have too much of a refund. It's hard to kind of do it without going through all the calculations.
For years, it was married filing joint with two exemptions.
Mm-hmm. But you're having too much withheld now,
that's
even
correct.
Now.
Yes.
Yeah, because you probably itemize, don't you?
I bet. Yes.
Yeah, and that's what it is. When people itemize, we have our mortgage, we have our real estate tax, we have some charitable giving, we have our state and local income tax withholdings.
Right.
Yeah. So you could do, you know, I can't tell you actually right off the top of my head without running numbers. I wouldn't want you to get in trouble.
Mm-hmm.
So you could raise your exemptions from two to some higher amount.
Okay. You know, thank you so much.
Okay.
Because that's how I thought it worked. And I asked my accountant and he brought me down to one. So.
Oh.
Oops.
That would make them withhold more.
Yes, more, yeah. And that would be way too much. Okay.
Yeah.
Thank you so much for clearing that up. That's terrific.
You're welcome. Good luck.
Thank you. Love the show.
Okay, thanks,
bye-bye.
Carolyn. Bye-bye. Folks, if you have questions, the number is 610-758-8810. And in fact, that is a question that comes up quite a bit. What should I withhold on my, what should I say on my W-4? And for some people, even, you can say maybe that you're not going to have any income subject to tax, and you could say zero. But then I think I haven't looked at a W-4 in a long time, but I think you can even say that there is a reason why you wouldn't be subject to withholding. Having said that as well, for those people who don't have enough withheld, or maybe they don't have enough wages to have those kinds of withholdings, there are other avenues for withholdings as well. Some people don't realize you can have withholdings on your Social Security. You can have withholdings on your pension. So sometimes you can manipulate the W-4P for your pension or the W-4, it might be called W-4S for Social Security. If you go on the website for Social Security, ssa.gov, you can find information there about adding withholdings, changing withholdings, eliminating withholdings, if you need to adjust for that. All right, so key events. We have another minute, but I'll go over the key events. Testing, nesting, investing, resting, divesting. We talked about education and setting the stage for that. A key event in your early years. Make sure you get a good job and do a good job and stay with the job because you want to build up your resume with your first job. Make sure that is very important. I did it, and it just helps with each successive job after that. Nesting. Buying less than you can afford. When I bought our first house, someone said, you want to buy a little bit more than you can afford because, you know, eventually, you know, your principal payment doesn't go up. So you get used to it and you're making more money. So you can buy a little bit more than you could afford. I would like to tell people buy less than you can afford. And I can talk more about that when we come back from our break. If you have questions, there's still plenty of time. Phone number is 610-758-8810.
WDIY thanks its members and Valley National Financial Advisors, offering a broad spectrum of financial services for more than 25 years, including estate planning and tax preparation, especially for Pennsylvania and New Jersey residents subject to state inheritance tax reporting. On the web at valleynationalgroup.com or 610-868-9000.
And you are listening to WDIY Allentown, 88.1 FM and WDIY.org, serving the Lehigh Valley. Lehigh Valley weather, current conditions, 39 degrees with light rain, fog, and mist. Tonight, rain is likely, lows around 36. Thursday and Friday, mostly sunny skies, highs in the lower 50s. And Saturday, chance of rain returns with highs around 35 degrees. The time now is 6:45 p.m. Now back to your financial choices with our host, Lori Siebert.
Thank you, Jeff. We are talking about financial planning in between taking tax questions. The phone number is 610-758-8810. So key events, nesting. I mentioned right before the break about, you know, if I could give a recommendation to people, I would tell them to buy less than they can afford. It's, I don't know why that seems like an impossible concept, but I think it's a great idea. I think if everybody did it, we'd all be able to save a little bit more money. But what that can help you factor in, when remember what I said happens in that nesting stage? The nesting stage is the probably longest period where we have the most unknowns. We have the least control. We don't know what's going to happen necessarily with our jobs, with the housing market, with having children, how many children. You know, there's always an oops once in a while. I didn't have any oops, but once in a while that happens. So we also might not know what's going to happen with our relationships, what's going to happen with our cars, what's going to happen to the house, you know, is the roof going to go? So there's a lot of unknowns during that stage. So instead of buying more than we can afford, buy a less than you can afford, and then you at least have a little wiggle room. I love for people to have options. When my husband and I bought our home, we assumed that I would always be working a very small part-time job. I had children, and we said, very small part-time job. We're not going to act like I'm ever going to make more money. And you know, it worked for us. It gave us a little bit of flexibility because sometimes there's an adjustment period as well when you go into home ownership that you hadn't anticipated when you're renting. When you rent, you don't realize, you know, that if the roof goes, your landlord will take care of it. But if you're a homeowner, you have to take care of it. And you never know when the hot water heater is going to go or when the appliances are going to go. And it's now your responsibility. And then there's lawn care and there's snow blowing and shoveling and all kinds of things that can happen. So if you end up going into a home that's a little bit less than you can afford, hopefully what you have the ability to do is save a little. And remember, I said each of these aspects will, you know, have a simultaneous impact on another area of our life. So I'm hoping that while you're nesting, if you do it a smart way, you actually will have extra money, cash flow to invest. And then that takes us to the next key event. In your investing stage, you've in my example, hopefully you've saved a little during the nesting periods. Maybe you're taking advantage of employer-sponsored retirement plans and getting a company match and things like that. If you don't have that, hopefully you're still saving a little bit in some retirement accounts like Mary, our caller earlier, had been doing. So you start investing. And what key things during this stage is making sure you're paying attention to your asset allocation and rebalancing your portfolio. This is more important than the actual investment selections. You want to make sure that you're investing to your risk tolerance, that you plan whether this your investment selection fits in with your risk tolerance. You don't want to be so risky that you would lose at all. You don't want to be so conservative that you might lose to inflation. So you want to be smart, maybe even a little non-emotional about this, because emotions impact our investing decisions, usually not in a good way. So try to take the emotion out of your investing. Pay attention to asset allocation and rebalancing your portfolio. The next stage, resting. Key events. How are you going to live? So what are you going to do? We had a caller earlier mention that they were going to go on Social Security at 62 and the husband was going to go on Social Security at 62. That may not be the best decision. You really have to stop and think about what are all the other aspects in your life that might affect that decision. So we have to think about how long are we going to live? What are we going to do when we're in retirement? What kind of cash flow do we expect to have? In that last stage of our life, that divesting stage, do we expect to leave anything to our heirs? Do we want to leave anything to our heirs? Do we have to? We don't have to. But some of those decisions will impact what we're going to do during each of these other stages. So in that resting stage, how are we going to live? Is the Social Security, if we take it at 62, going to be enough to get us through all of those resting years, those retirement years? Because at age 62, if we file for our benefits at 62, we have permanently reduced the benefit, and it can be quite significant. So we may not want to start collecting at 62 if it's not going to necessarily work with our cash flow. Okay, and then divesting is the estate planning stage. Can you gift before you die? That would be one of the key events I would hope that people are paying attention to when they're getting kind of on in their later years. When I hear people say, you know, I might need it. Well, you might not need it if you're worth, you know, several million dollars, but you might need it if you only have 100,000. So, you know, think about where you are, what stage, and then if you're going to pass assets on to heirs, how are you going to do it and what is the best way to do it? So we had a question come off air and we missed a call as well. I apologize for that. You could probably still get a call in, 610-758-8810 if you want to try. We had Philip call in. And let me see if I can read this note. He takes $6,500 out of savings and puts it in a new IRA. Then he immediately converts it to a Roth before earnings. Why would he have to pay taxes on that money again? And he's over 50. I'm wondering, there's not other information here, but what I would say what Philip is doing, when he said he takes $6,500 out of savings and puts it into a new IRA and then immediately converts it to a Roth, I think what Philip is doing is a non-deductible IRA. What's a little loophole that exists and has not been closed is if folks are not otherwise eligible to make a contribution to a Roth because their income is too high, because there are income limitations. If your income is over $188,000, Mary filing joint, technically you can't do a Roth. So what some people do is, and they may not be able to do a traditional IRA because maybe they have an employer plan at work. So if you're an active participant in an employer plan, make too much money, you can't do a traditional, you make too much money, can't do a Roth, oh, you say, I can't do anything. Well, the loophole is you can put money into a non-deductible IRA people. I mean, we've always been able to do that. We just don't hear about people doing it very often. But you can put $6,500 into a non-deductible IRA. Therefore, Philip, in your example, we're not taking a deduction on the tax return for that. It's non-deductible. And then he immediately converts it to a Roth before it has any earnings, so that when he converts it to a Roth, there's no tax, because the basis in his non-deductible IRA was $6,500. So therefore, there's no tax to pay on the conversion. He now puts it into a Roth IRA, and that's how you do it, because there's no income limits on converting IRA money to Roth IRA money anymore. And that's where the loophole came in. There used to be income limitations. You couldn't convert. High earners couldn't convert if their income was over like $100,000. So, Philip, in your example, you said, why would he have to pay taxes on that money again? He wouldn't have to pay taxes if there's no basis, and he wouldn't have to pay taxes if there's no earnings. So, Philip, in your example, if you convert, though, and you're over 50, but you're not maybe over age 59 and a half, what the IRS is not going to allow you to do is convert IRA money, put it into a Roth, and then take it out without a penalty, because it's a converted IRA that has a little bit different rules. Because you would not have been able to take the money out of an IRA without a 10% penalty, they're not going to let you convert it to a Roth and then take it out and then avoid the 10% penalty. I hope that helps. I hope that's what you were going at. We have Rich. I think he's on the phone. If we can do these calls quick. Rich, hi. Are they off air? Okay. Rich refinanced a mortgage and home equity. He says, how do I include that on taxes if I'm doing them myself? Refinanced mortgage and home equity. How do I include that on the taxes? He's doing the taxes himself. If you refinanced a mortgage, Rich, and you paid points, then you have to amortize the points over the life of the loan. But if it's just regular mortgage interest, then you just report that. It's reported to you on a 1098, and you report that as mortgage interest on Schedule A as an itemized deduction. And same thing with the home equity. There's certain income limitations or borrowing that you may be subject to, but they're really quite high. We're talking about people who have, you know, a lot of money, big loans. So it's probably just regular mortgage, but points for a refinance are amortized over the life of the loan. And is it too late to find someone to do his taxes? No, not at all. There's lots of preparers out there who will still do your taxes. And then we had Dave called in. His wife started a business taxed at 40%. What can you do to reduce the tax other than increasing expenses? Dave, if your wife started a business, when we talk about taxing at 40%, I'm imagining what really is happening is that she, first of all, she probably had a profit. And that's awesome. That's great, because you will always net out more money by making money, even if you have to pay taxes. So I think it's great when people make money. Dave, the way people get deductions and don't pay taxes is they spend money to get a deduction, and then you're net, not better. So it's great your wife started a business. It's great she's making money. The 40% probably comes from a number of things, though, which you don't realize you yourself probably are paying if you're working with wages. We all have, if we're working and have earned income, we have federal tax, state tax, local tax, and Social Security. And there's two parts of Social Security. There is the old age piece and the Medicare piece. If you are self-employed, you pay both sides of it. That's the only difference, Dave. As an employee, your employer's paying one side of it. You're paying the other side of it. Your wife, if she's self-employed, she's paying both sides. I never encourage people to go incur expenses just to get a deduction. I won't do it. If you have to spend money in your business, go ahead and do it, and then you can get a deduction as long as it's a valid business expense. You also want to make sure that you're tracking all of your expenses. Some people don't realize all the things they could track. So you want to take advantage of that. If your wife's having to drive all over Kingdom Come to drum up business, she should be keeping track of her miles. Mileage is a big deduction some people might miss. You have to have contemporaneous records. Make sure you're keeping good records. Don't make anything up. Always assume you're going to be audited. That's my my take on things. So great questions tonight, great calls. I appreciate everyone calling in. I didn't get to quite finish up my key events and some of the things, but I hope I touched on a number of them. Testing, nesting, investing, resting, divesting, helping people out, making good, smart decisions about each of these stages, and understanding that at any one of these stages, we can be doing, having another stage apply. In that divesting stage, I could still be investing, and I am still resting as well. And I might be testing people too, like my kids at that stage. Maybe it's a good idea to test them to see how good they're going to be with their inheritance, how good they're going to be to you, that kind of thing. So I know it was a play on words, a little corny. You thought I'd test it out and see how it went over tonight. Folks, if you have questions, though, you're welcome to send them through the website, yourfinancialchoices.com. Next week, we're going to talk about considerations in real estate, homeowners, renters, landlords. Rod Young will be the guest host. He is a CPA and a CFP as well. So Rod will be sitting in for me. I have another commitment. I want to thank the listeners. I want to thank Judy Ann. Thank Jeff for being here. Stay tuned for In the Tradition Folk Music with Tom Druckenmiller. Remember, pay attention. Be proactive, not reactive. Make the best of your financial choices and have a great week.